Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. The two LQ updates that I have for you today are just conference updates from the two conferences that I attended recently. The first conference that I attended was the Desktop Linux Summit, which was held in San Diego. Now, DLS is a little shorter than some shows at only 2 days, but it does have three tracks, and the tracks are pretty well jam-packed. No longer at the fairgrounds, DLS has upgraded to the Grand Hyatt in San Diego, and for those of you that have never been there, it's just a magnificent building, and for a hotel, it's absolutely huge. It's two 40-story towers, so one of the bigger hotels that I've seen. The first day, Doc Searles had an extremely interesting and pretty funny presentation, and I was lucky enough to be able to catch up with him and a bunch of other people, including Steve, who used to be a Microsoft employee, for a couple of drinks after. And it's funny, you often learn as much after the conference, just going out and having dinner and chatting as you do during. Also on the first day was a preview by Nat Friedman of Novell. And Novell has in store for the desktop with the next couple of releases. There's definitely some really nice eye candy on the way with XGL and some of the other things that they're doing in their group. So it was interesting to see kind of what's in store for them. The second day then had the main keynote, which was Jeffrey Moore. And he covered Linux on the desktop in relation to the Chasm, which he's very famous for his Crossing the Chasm stuff. And I didn't agree with 100% of what he said, but he's just an absolutely fantastic speaker and obviously a fantastic writer. And he did raise some excellent points. It's something that definitely got you thinking, which is always good. Also on the second day, Ian Murdoch spoke and Michael Robertson spoke. So like I said, it was pretty jam-packed. And the CEO of Linspire also announced FreeSpire at the show. And FreeSpire will give you the choice of being sort of like Fedora, where everything is open source. And then they have another option where you get NVIDIA, you get MP3, you get kind of all the things that most of the free distributions don't give you. So I do wish them luck. They're kind of taking a little bit of a different paradigm and not kind of giving up their religion and being a little bit more pragmatic about things. But choice is good, and that's another choice that Linux enthusiasts are going to have, and probably one that's better for the strictly non-open source, non-hardcore Linux fans. So then probably one of the most anticipated talks of the summit came when Rob Enderle got on stage. And if you're not familiar with Rob Enderle, I've talked about him on the podcast before and also on my blog, and you can just Google his name. I'm sure you'll come up with some colorful things. And while he's certainly still a bit misguided on some things, I have to admit that he was a little bit more coherent than I had anticipated. I'd never heard him speak live before, although I had read some of his typically incoherent ramblings, and he actually did make some points, and on a couple of different issues at that, and I'm absolutely as shocked as you on that, but he could have one toe in reality now, I guess, or he could have been afraid of getting lynched is the other option, which Arnie was happy to kind of jump in on that one. But all in all, a great show, and one I'm definitely proud to have the LQ name associated with, and it's a show that I do plan on attending next year. The second show I attended was the MySQL User Conference, which is a show that MySQL AB put on in conjunction with O'Reilly. Unfortunately, the show directly conflicted with a Desktop Linux Summit, so basically I flew to San Diego for 2 days, and they both started on the same day, and then after the Desktop Linux Summit ended, I flew up to San Jose and then drove down to Santa Clara, which is where the MySQL User Conference was. And the first day I got there opened with Martin Mikos, which is the CEO of MySQL AB, having some very good things, I think, to say about the future of MySQL. They have an alternative storage engine on the way for those worried about the future of InnoDB now that it's kind of an Oracle acquisition. And in addition, they just renewed their InnoDB contract with a multi-year agreement. So the combination of those two announcements, I think, should quell some of the fears people have had about sticking with the transactional support in MySQL AB. They also gave a little bit more information about Falcon, which is their own upcoming new storage engine that is going to be based on the work that Jim Starkey did. And of course, his company was a recent MySQL AB acquisition also. After Martin Tim O'Reilly's radar speech, which is great no matter what conference you see it at. He does this at a lot of different conferences, from ETEC and OSCON, and now this one. And it's always a fantastic talk to see if you ever do get a chance. And some presentation issues aside, which are definitely rare for him, this one was no exception. And I have to say, Tim did a very good job of off the cuff and off the top of his head covering things for, I would say, the first full 15 or 20 minutes. He had no slides at all. They just couldn't get his Mac plugged in correctly to the presentation engine. And he just completely went off the top of his head. And once the slides did work, it was amazing to see how closely really he had followed the his presentation just by memory. I think that's just goes to show how much Tim speaks and how good of a speaker that he really is. Now, moving on to the sessions after the opening speeches, they were very interesting and like some of the conferences, very technical. It's kind of similar to OSCON, where you actually really do learn things in the sessions. It's not market, just marketing speak. I had attended mostly performance and some scaling sessions, and I definitely did learn some things that I'm going to apply to LQ. Now, I was asking one speaker about his experience with full text, and Monty, who's one of the original writers of MySQL, actually stepped into the conversation and took about 15 minutes to just sit down with me after the session outside of it. And literally, he was digging through MySQL source code and remembering what people had done and looking at bug reports and some of the stuff that Sergey had done with full text to see what version I was running versus when things were checked in and what was on the horizon with 5.0 and what was on the horizon with Falcon, and just really took time out to dig in deep technically. So the bad news is the change that he was looking for and the fixes that he knew that what were in there were in a version that was, we're already running a version after that. So it unfortunately wasn't just as easy as upgrading. The good news is the recently aforementioned, the Falcon storage engine is supposed to have a phenomenal full text engine in it. So long term, that would probably be the way that we'll go. After explaining the situation a little bit more and getting into things, we pretty much decided that in the meantime, a 64-bit MySQL with a ton of RAM is probably going to be the only viable solution. But how many companies would the founder and one of the main original contributors just sit down with you and at a conference that they're putting on, no less, so he's obviously short on time, and just start digging through code? It was just an absolutely awesome, and I have to thank Monty for that. Now on to the news. The first story I have is the Microsoft malaise. In his usual style, Dvorak mixes rational thought with wild speculation to pretty much just get readers' attention. Stepping aside from that for a second, let's look into the actual topic, since it is an interesting one. Microsoft is clearly finding it difficult to compete in today's environment. As he mentioned, that's not going to stop them from just making piles and piles of cash, now and for the foreseeable future. But in this industry, let's not forget how remarkably fast the giants can fall. If you look back at what were just huge companies not that long ago, take DEC and what happened to IBM, although they did come around, giants fall just at a record-breaking pace. So what is Microsoft doing right now? I think it looks pretty clear here that Vista is going to be a huge disappointment. It will get some traction on new PCs, obviously, but I don't see any kind of immediate, you know, the quote-unquote must-have upgrades, and especially potential in the enterprise for that. The product is so late, and the feature list is just so cut, that if Microsoft didn't have the, you know, 85-plus market share that they currently do, this would have just been absolutely disastrous instead of a disaster. And on that note, there's speculation now that after missing the holiday season and attempting to launch in January of 2007, that might be closer to in between April and June of 2007, so there could be another delay on the horizon. Microsoft officially so far has denied that and said they're on track, but the speculation on that is growing, and I've seen it from multiple different sources now. So in addition to the Vista disappointment, at a time when OpenOffice.org is really coming into its own, the latest release of OpenOffice.org really is a very solid release. It does almost everything almost all the users are going to need. There are some edge cases where it still doesn't fit your needs, but it is at this point a very good product. Office has decided to completely redo the UI from scratch, and this is from the ground up. So the last time I remember them changing Office UI probably was Office 95, maybe 97. And in addition to that, so far it looks like when they do release it, there's going to be 7 versions, which that's astonishing to me. So this is a bold move. And to take it with one of their two cash cows, with OpenOffice.org becoming so good, and with ODF now as an ISO-accepted standard, it's just going to be fascinating to watch this play out. And I think one of the arguments for sticking with Office is, hey, our users know it, there's no training, yeah, we have to pay for it, but having to retrain our entire staff would just be so much more expensive than just paying for Microsoft Office. With that argument clearly out of the way, and with OpenOffice.org clearly a viable alternative, we'll have to see if some major organizations don't take the leap and go with OpenOffice.org here. So I think with the writing on the wall for their two cash cows, Microsoft has started to diversify, and we've seen this for at least a full year now, and probably more than that. And one of the problems, I think, is they're just going in too many directions at once, and in addition to that and exacerbating that, is they're not really doing an outstanding job in any of the directions. So probably the biggest success is the Xbox 360, which is a very nice product from what I hear. I don't have one, and I'm not really a console gamer, so I'm not a good gauge. But they fail to gauge the demand and just way underproduced, which in the console industry is just a killer. You can just see what it did to Nintendo on that one. Sony kind of has slipped up with the PS3, and Xbox 360 really could have just jumped in and made huge sales, and stores just did not have them in stock. So stepping down from there, I think MSN has failed to gain really any ground in the search space. I just don't see too many people using MSN at this point. There's some argument over IE7 defaulting to it now, so that could change if it is the default, but who knows how that one's going to play out. And that's pretty much true with most of the online attempts Microsoft has made. You know, Live made a big splash when it first came out, and you really don't hear anything about that anymore. I know they just announced an ad network today, and with Google clearly at number one in that space, and then Yahoo entrenched after buying Overture at number two. I'm not sure how much penetration they're going to be able to have there. They're clearly having trouble getting some traction. But I think all of these things, from Vista to MSN, really share a common thread, and that's Microsoft seems to be losing touch with their users. They're concentrating on everything except for what their users want, and that's really, at any size, a dangerous thing for a company to do. So this brings us to one of the points that I definitely, partially at least, disagree with in the Dvorak article. John says Microsoft is preoccupied with Google, who's not even a competitor. And I think that's really short-sighted. Google is definitely a competitor. And the reason for this is that they're slowly proving that the web can be an OS, at least for a large portion of the users. There may always be some power users and some niche users that just the web is not a paradigm that's going to fit their desktop usage. But in the end, if most people can do that, nothing could be more detrimental to the Microsoft bottom line. And in addition to that, Microsoft is making themselves a competitor by trying to get into search, by trying to get into pretty much every space that Google's in. Now, the partial disagreement part comes in because I do think that their complete preoccupation at this point has become a problem for them. Seems like every time Google releases an app, Microsoft throws a Me Too kind of copy out there sometime later that either isn't as well thought out or isn't as well implemented. And it just seems like they're really losing focus and just trying to go everywhere all at once. Now, the really ironic thing for me here is that one of the only innovations I can remember coming out of Microsoft that's been relevant for quite some time is XML HTTP request. And that's the base of AJAX, which Google and many other companies are using to get that kind of desktop feel of the web apps. So it could be their own innovation that may plant the seed that finally displaces them. So what an odd type of justice that would be. The last story I have is, will Sun open source Java? This seems to just be an age-old endless question. And with new CEO and Jonathan Schwartz and the Java One conference right around the corner, that the topic has just come right back to the surface and is getting a ton of attention right now. So keep in mind, though, to Sun, open sourcing Java would almost absolutely mean the CDDL and not the GPL. And if you remember, OpenSolaris, for instance, is CDDL, so you can't imagine they would open source Java under an incompatible license with OpenSolaris. It just wouldn't make any sense from their perspective to do that. With Schwartz being one of the major proponents of open sourcing Solaris, I think the chances of Java being open sourced are probably greater than they ever have been before, but there's clearly some major debate still going on within Sun itself. And I think the question that I see from the people inside Sun that don't want to open source it is, what is this going to do for Sun, and what's it going to do for the stockholders? Is there value in open sourcing it? Seems to be the main question. Now, my main question right now is, with the rumors I'm seeing of up to 30% layoffs, does the new CEO really have more pressing issues on his plate than this one? And at a company the size of Sun, I think the last time I saw they did just under 40,000 employees. It was like 38,500 or 39,000. 10% of the workers are probably legitimately superfluous, but losing 30% would just be absolutely devastating. They really are an R&D firm that tries to do a ton of new things and new innovations, and just losing almost a full 30 of your staff, I don't think they would be able to recover from it. They might show a profit for a quarter or two after, just because of the huge savings they would have on salaries, but long term, I think it would be a death knell. So he's definitely not in an enviable position right now, that is for sure. Back to Java for a moment. One of the major gripes with Java has always been the redistribution verbiage. There's not able to ship it in Windows, you don't see many Linux distributions shipping it. I think FreeBSD actually does ship it, I want to say, I saw somewhere, but by and large, most operating systems don't come with Java out of the box, or at least not a current version of Java. Some do ship with Java 1.1, which at this point is pretty old. So open source or not, that really has to change if Java wants to succeed here. So one of the common cons that I keep seeing for the potentially open sourcing Java is that it will surely cause forks and all this confusion. And the reality is there are already a bunch of forks around, and I don't see a lot of confusion. You know, there's Harmony from Apache. On the GNU side, there's ClassPath. Of course, C-sharp really is a Java fork in essence. And I just don't see the confusion that people are talking about there. No one calls those Java. You know, Harmony is called Harmony. C-sharp is called C-sharp. So that just seems to be a non-starter. Will Sun reverse its long-time thinking on the topic and go open, though? That's the question. And if they do, well, companies like IBM, who just has a massive investment in Java in their middleware stack, will they jump in and participate with Sun, who in many regards is a direct competitor? In the bigger picture for Sun, will Jonathan be able to turn around a company that does contribute a ton to open source, between GNOME and especially OpenOffice, and many other smaller contributions too, and contributes a ton to the computing world in general, from NFS way back to much of the original XML specification and obviously Java, but much more than that also. But they haven't turned an annual profit in over 5 years now, so can he turn that around? And it's not going to be an easy task, regardless of what way he goes about that end. And as usual, and this seems to be the case with everything, there is some irony here. For some of the major misjudgments Scott McNeely made in the past, and I think the one glaring example is that he spent a ton of money on the network computing, which never did pan out for Sun, and he didn't really seem to take a ton of flack for that. He seemed to have been pushed out of Sun now by Wall Street for the products at Sun not scaling vertically at a time when really the whole market is moving to scaling horizontally. And what I mean by that is, quite some time back, you bought huge, you know, E25K machines that were, you know, $1 million and just were monster iron machines. These days, everyone's scaling out horizontally, like Google, where you have a ton of commodity machines and you cluster them. So at a time when no one's buying high-end hardware, he seems to have taken a huge amount of flack for some not scaling high enough, which shows you kind of where Wall Street's at, I think. But in reality, the Sun low end products, there's Sunfires on the dual Opteron side on the bottom end. It's actually a very nice product offering, so it seems really odd to me. The other kind of interesting thing here is that Jonathan Schwartz came from a company that worked very closely with Next when Steve Jobs was in control. Sun had bought them to implement some OpenStep apps. They had one that was like Visio, I think it was called Diagram. But obviously they would have had to work very close at Next, so with Steve Jobs. So it will be interesting to see if Sun does anything with Apple at this point, kind of going back to their roots. Of course, OpenStep turned into Cocoa, which is the current, even in the current Mac OS, it comes into play. So kind of a tangled web there of the past, and we'll see if anything comes in the future of that. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.